For months, Ebola's seemingly unstoppable spread in West Africa filled the headlines, but the outbreak seemed remote until Dr. Craig Spencer returned to New York City from Guinea in October and fell ill. Suddenly, all of us were tracking his movements and trying to figure out whether city residents who may have had contact with him were at risk. Now, Spencer is speaking out. He told WNYC's Mary Harris about his time in isolation and how he's adjusting to everyday life.
Hey. Craig Spencer and his fiancée, Morgan Dixon, still live in the Harlem apartment where he felt the first nagging symptoms of Ebola in October, where she was quarantined for nearly 3 weeks, and which briefly became the epicenter of an Ebola in America panic.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Another Ebola case on U.S. soil.
The patient had been on the subway in a bowling alley with friends.
He had close contact with at least three friends.
That was 3 months ago, but Spencer is still shaken.
Physically, I'm fine. I feel well. I know that my life will never be back to normal, or what I think is normal. I know that for the rest of my life, people are going to ask me questions about my experience as a patient and my experience as a provider.
If it was up to you, would none of us know your name?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Spencer says he has no idea how he was exposed, but he returned from Guinea on October 17th, carrying not just the virus, but the weight of what he'd seen. He felt exhausted from 6 weeks at the heart of the outbreak.
His fiance just kind of wrote to me one day. She's like, yeah, you wouldn't mind, you know, giving Craig a call. I think it's kind of rough for him.
This is Tim Jagadic, a friend who also treated Ebola patients in West Africa.
It seems like he's just been kind of not himself.
He told Craig,
you're not going to be yourself for the next few weeks, and don't try to force it upon yourself. And he was like, okay, yeah, you know, you're right. Tonight, I think I'll just go. I'm going to go bowling. I'm like, all right, enjoy.
That was October 22nd. The next day, everything changed.
When I woke up that morning, I didn't feel quite right. I was breathing a little faster, and I felt a little warm, and I suspected that maybe I wasn't okay. So I got up and sat on the couch and thought for a second, and took my temperature, and it was 100.3. In a way, for that one brief second, it was almost a sigh of relief, because the moment that I had been fearing and concerned about had kind of arrived, and I felt not at peace with being infected, but almost could stop worrying about getting it if it had already come.
He called Doctors Without Borders in Brussels, and they notified the New York City Department of Health. A hazmat ambulance was dispatched to bring Spencer to Bellevue Hospital. The critical care unit there had been preparing for this moment for months.
I was already in my personal protective equipment.
Dr. Laura Evans was Spencer's lead physician.
So I didn't even know his name, so I introduced myself and learned his name.
At first, she thought he was just another test patient.
I realized it wasn't a drill when Dr. Spencer's initial labs came back. He had lab abnormalities that you couldn't fake.
And while the media outrage outside the hospital got louder, inside, the noise died down. Dr. Evans gave Spencer his diagnosis.
She said, you know, the test has come back and it's positive. And just sat there with me for a while and kind of sat in silence and thought about what this means. And, you know, the next question that I had was, okay, what do we do next?
What they did next was just about everything. The CDC flew an advisory team into the city. An experimental antiviral medication called brancidofovir was found. A blood transfusion from an Ebola survivor was arranged. And Spencer and Evans waited. They spent hours just talking.
It takes about 15 minutes to put on your personal protective equipment. I'm not going to stay in there 5 minutes because it took me 15 minutes to put this stuff on. So I would kind of stay and hang out for a while. And so we got to know each other really well.
There are no visitors allowed in Bellevue's isolation unit. And Spencer's room was equipped with a broken television. He could still use his cell phone, but his only face-to-face contact was with his caretakers.
Within a few days of being hospitalized, I wasn't feeling great.
So I would bring Craig a report of all his labs every day, and we would go over those and talk about what was trending in the right direction, what wasn't trending in the right direction.
I always tried to have a purpose to each day, to have a goal for each day. And it may have been just concentrating on eating more or not worrying about the numbers.
I was worried about his nutritional intake for a while, so we talked a lot, you know, several days in a row about how to try and get him to be able to take more. so as to not get as weak or debilitated.
Spencer knew his doctors and nurses were now taking on the same risk he had. Remember, it was October. Two nurses had just been infected while taking care of Thomas Eric Duncan in Texas.
I tried to do as much as I could when I was strong enough to prevent them from having to deal with kind of the more high-risk situations, cleaning up after me or, you know, putting the monitor on myself, because I knew, obviously, that it was a risk.
And eventually, he started feeling better. The hospital gave him a banjo to pass the time while he waited to test Ebola-free. Dr. Evans forced him to ride an exercise bike to avoid muscle wasting. And when he was eating again, his nurses brought him homemade food. For Spencer, it was bittersweet.
It felt a little unfair to receive all this attention. A bunch of other people trying to work so hard for my care when I didn't feel like that's what the people I took care of had received. I'm incredibly thankful for that, but at the same time feel, I don't know, that's unfair.
He thinks about that even more now that he's considering a return to West Africa.
I don't know what the interaction would be between me and someone else in a treatment center. Would it be hard? Sure. And being unable to provide the type of care that I received, it would be very heavy and hard to come to terms with.
Last week, the number of confirmed Ebola cases in West Africa dropped below 100, an optimistic sign. But Spencer hopes that by speaking now, he'll draw attention back to the fragile health systems there. He feels there's so much work left to be done. For WNYC, I'm Mary Harris.